Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast aims to bring you perspectives from leading experts involved in caring for patients with locally advanced cervical cancer on the optimal use of current standard of care approaches and the role of the multidisciplinary team in improving outcomes for patients through improved collaboration and optimization of the patient journey. This activity is funded by an independent medical education request from AstraZeneca and is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME. In this podcast, Professor Bradley Monk, a gynecologic oncologist, and Ms. Kathleen Smith, a nurse practitioner, discuss the prognostic risk factors for patients with locally advanced cervical cancer and how best to support patients throughout their treatment journey for optimal outcomes.
Greetings and welcome. My name is Professor Bradley Monk, and I'm a gynecologic oncologist here at the University of Arizona College of Medicine in Phoenix, Arizona. It's my pleasure to be joined today by Ms. Kathy Smith, a nurse practitioner at Fox Chase Cancer Center in Philadelphia. In this section, we will discuss current treatment approaches for patients with locally advanced cervical cancer and how we can optimize outcomes and the best use of the standard of care. So good to be with you and to have this short conversation. Tell me how you interact with patients with newly diagnosed locally advanced cervical cancer.
So when patients come into our practice, they have either symptoms of locally advanced cervical cancer, they could have vaginal bleeding, pain, and they're usually, for locally advanced cervical cancers, are diagnosed with a big cervical tumor. And from there, we work the patient up and we find the best treatment strategy for that patient.
By locally advanced cervical cancer, I think we mean tumors that are too large for surgical resection. These would be tumors that would be generally greater than 4 centimeters, spread outside the cervix into the paracervical soft tissue and even involve the lymph nodes. What are the risk factors for cervical cancer, Kathy?
So some of the risks are, as I said, large tumor size greater than 5 centimeters. Young age women under 40 is also a risk factor. The histology, like non-squamous cervical cancers, positive lymph nodes on MRI is a risk factor, and then advanced stage 3 or stage 4.
Yeah, those are definitely poor prognostic factors. I think if we've learned anything from the pandemic is that vaccination works. And we've also learned that in cervical cancer, that this is a virally induced cancer, the human papillomavirus, and you get vaccinated against it. And if you get vaccinated against it as a young individual, generally between the ages of 9 and 12, boys and girls, you're probably not going to die. And the other thing that we've learned is you can test for the virus right on the cervix, just like you can get COVID tested. So I think this pandemic has, there's been a lot of parallel messages between vaccination and viral testing. Now, you say you work with various groups in your practice. You're a nurse. Who else is involved in the patient experience in treating cervical cancer that's too large for resection?
So I work with GYN oncologists that are surgeons and also board certified in medicine. And so they treat the patient, for these types of cancers, along with radiation oncologists. It requires a multidisciplinary team to manage the complexity of these treatment, of this treatment plan.
And are those cases discussed at a tumor board? We call it a tumor board. Internationally, they call it a multidisciplinary conference. Do you have tumor boards?
That's correct. Yes, we have tumor board weekly. We meet weekly with medical oncology, surgical oncology, radiation oncology, pathologists. It also includes genetics, nursing, nurse navigators, our fellows, residents. And we meet weekly to discuss new cases. And then sometimes when there is disease progression or recurrence and new treatment decisions need to be made.
Now, how do you support the patient in this journey? They will see a surgeon, see a systemic treater, which could be a gynecologic oncologist or even a medical oncologist, radiation. Do you help coordinate that? How do you help them get through that very stressful situation?
Yeah, I think it's important to really develop a relationship early on, since there are so many key clinicians in the patient's care. So establishing that relationship early on is important to help identify any barriers that could be present in terms of, it could be transportation issues or financial concerns. And trying to educate the patient on exactly what is involved in this treatment regimen, and then working with the patient throughout the course of their treatment, and also educating them on side effects of the treatment and management of those side effects, the early side effects and late side effects as well.
Yeah, you know, we've learned that sort of we need to stay on schedule for treating with radiation. We try to do it under 8 weeks, which would be 56 days. And because big treatment delays, quite frankly, the cancer grows back if you don't keep the pressure on it. How do you keep patients stay on schedule? You mentioned transportation, weather, all sorts of issues. How do you do that so that we avoid treatment delays?
So, establishing that relationship is key. Asking, is the patient working? Are they planning on working through this? Are they able to work through this? Help coordinating their appointment times. Is an early morning radiation appointment better for them? Can they come after work? If they need transportation issues, connecting them to social service in our institution to help them work through some of the logistics of getting to their treatments, contact information, if they're not able to make it, where do they call, how do they call, who do they talk to, and then coordinating, with follow-up calls in terms of chemotherapy, getting a time that is convenient for the patient and doing our best to meet their needs.
Yeah, so within that 55, 56 days, you have to do the external beam, the fractionated radiation Monday through Friday, and then the brachytherapy, and then the chemotherapy. How do you coordinate all that together, again, to stay on time and to make sure that the proper treatment is delivered?
So, I usually meet the patient in the beginning, and like I said, we establish a relationship, and then I kind of outline for the patient. So usually the nurse practitioner, the nurse who is going to be working with the patient, and then coordinating, I usually set up their chemotherapy appointments and also radiation appointments, and have a lot of conversations back and forth with the patient, with their, the physicians, either the radiation oncologist or surgical oncologist, what needs to be done, and then work through those, the logistics of that. There's also nurse navigators that in our institution that are key with helping the patient as well.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the importance of brachytherapy, how it takes to very skilled radiation oncologists. Do you have difficulty with access to brachytherapy? Because in some parts of the world, there's a lot of cancer, but there's not very many radiation units or brachytherapy expertise. Do you have trouble with access to that?
At our institution, no. We don't. The standard of care would be, chemo, radiation with concurrent weekly cisplatin followed by brachytherapy. Sometimes if there is a patient that's having problems logistically, we may admit them for the brachytherapy for that short period of time after their external beam radiation. We've done that a few times to help if there's a problem with the logistics of coming.
Yeah, thank you for that. And so the first component, external beam radiation, the second component, brachytherapy, and then the third, systemic therapy. And you outlined it well, weekly cisplatin. There's this attempt to give chemotherapy after what we call outback. We did that. That was presented at ASCO. That was negative. And we have a very nice trial, Interlace, which adds additional cycles of chemotherapy before. We'll have to wait and see what that shows. But I think the standard remains the standard: external beam, radiation, brachytherapy, and weekly systemic cisplatin. So thank you. And so long for now.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com. Don't forget, there are also two other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.